You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. President's Day. Like, why am I doing a show? Like, what is this about? Yeah, it's like, shouldn't I be, like, goofing off with the rest of the federal employees? It's not even a national holiday anymore. Oh, that's why I'm doing it. It's not a national holiday. It's a regional holiday, don't you know? Yeah, so regional holiday means you should work, yes? Yeah, I guess. What the hell, man? Are you a working guy or you're a vacation guy? Maybe at some point, don't you transition? Yeah, maybe I should transition. President's Day being observed around the country today. Named after used to have separate holidays for Lincoln and Washington for their birthdays. So then we had to make room. Columbus got shit canned. Presidents got consolidated. And so that's the way that thing worked. And so now we have presidents there. We didn't used to have that. You know, when it was, you know, we honored Christopher Columbus for finding the new world. Come on, he got us all here. We owed him something for that now. It's nothing but nothing more than another Italian criminal. That's right. We've seen them all on TV. So they got that. The Italians got that going for them. What do they give us? They gave us pizza and crime families. And so, anywho, so you got that going for you this morning. And then, what else is going on? So, Columbus, when I was a kid. And then, you know, Washington was on our stamps. He's not on our stamps anymore. There's a lot of things on our stamps. I haven't seen George Washington lately. How do I know that? Because I don't know, for some reason, and I don't even know. Do you remember when we were kids? Do you remember collecting stamps and bringing them to school for some kind of fundraiser? Yeah, what was that about? Where was the money coming from on that deal? I remember that, though. You ripped off the stamps from envelopes, I'm looking it up now. Stamp collecting fundraising in the 1960s. Yeah, we took them to school. We would do all kinds of stuff. Oh, look at this. 4 cent stamp. How to collect used stamps. Saving postage stamps for charity fundraising donations. Sell these stamps, usually in by the sack, to stamp collectors. Directory updated monthly of charities who need your used postage stamps for fundraising. Yeah, so we would do that. We'd also collect money for the pagan baby. Used to do that too, back in the day. Back in the day. And our stamps worth anything if they're postmarked? But these would have all been postmarked stamps. Yeah, that's what. How do charities make money from used postage stamps? Most recycled postage stamps are sold as killaware. Charitable institutions and churches accept recycled stamp donations, and they sell these old postage stamps by bags or packets to, who are these people? Philatelists. What are they? Search for philatelists. Definition. A specialty. One who collects and studies stamps. Philately. Philately? I'm a philatelist? So that's how we made money? I don't know. So we did that. And then, but you know, and then Washington's birthday would roll around, Lincoln's birthday would roll around, and we would honor them as what was appropriate in the United States of America. That's right. That's how we did it. That's right. And you learned about George Washington, the cherry tree, all the rest of that stuff. Most of it all fabricated. We learned later. But let me tell you, nothing wrong with a little fabrication as long as you don't like it too much. But that, yeah, that's the way it used to be. But now President's Day. So it's more of a probably what, retail event than anything else? So yeah, get out there. You might find some good sales today. Yeah, especially if you're looking at investing in winter clothing. That's all right. So if you're looking at, you're going to get a good sale on winter stuff. And since it's cold around most of the country, you might be able to use that. So, yeah. But what was George Washington's greatest achievement? Think about that. So we're going to talk about President's Day today. And we're going to talk about Abraham Lincoln. To me, Lincoln now, you'll see Lincoln's record distorted, right? The Great Emancipator and all that. And I'm not, what Lincoln was he was president of a, you talk about a divided country, hello. And so Lincoln's job was, in his mind, to save the Union. And if you listen to the things he said, as he charted his path was not clearly a moral decision for him. It was a political decision. It was a real decision. And I say that in terms of real politic. His job, as he saw it, was to save the Union and the United States. Or were we a single nation under a federal government? Or were we a confederation of, and I don't say confederation in terms of the Confederacy, but were we an organization of separate states? That issue had yet to be decided, and the Civil War decides that. So Lincoln, you know, presides over that. And so what is his job? His job is to save the Union in his mind. And when you read his actual statements, until ultimately he emancipates the slaves, and he wants to emancipate the slaves to link the war to a higher cause, which is slavery. But if you even go through, and I've done this before in the program, which is kind of interesting, but if you even go through that, who freed slaves right? And who allowed slaves, and in what years did that happen? Okay, so obviously we tend to focus on the American South, but what was the status of the black man around the world in that era? Who was the first country that freed its slaves and prohibited slavery? Now, you had countries that, like Great Britain, they prohibited the trafficking of slaves, okay? But that's as far as that thing went. Did they free slaves? Did they guarantee them equal rights? Did they, you know, things like that. And so, I mean, to me, it's when you go back and you say, okay, what was it? When was it? And how was it? It's a little bit different picture that gets painted, and I think people distort Lincoln's record. You know, when they gloss over the great emancipator and Lincoln, but that's not what Lincoln was. He did that, absolutely, but he also said, if I could save the Union and not free a slave, I would do that. If I could save the Union and I would have to free all the slaves, I would do that, but I will save the Union. In fact, let me read the entire quote. So, President's Day, kind of an interesting intellectual event. And what was Washington's greatest birthday, greatest achievement? Was it at Valley Forge? Or was it the peaceful transition? Annotation in August 1862, Lincoln stated, if I could save the Union without freeing any slaves, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing all the slaves, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing some and leaving others alone, I would do that. Abraham Lincoln to Horace Greeley. So, again, I don't think that makes Lincoln anything less. Because ultimately, he is the guy who holds the nation together. He is the guy that does, in fact, right, emancipate slaves in this country. He's also the guy that sets the path to heal the nation. And I think much of that healing, much of that healing is... we don't even go near those footnotes when we look at memorials in the South. And so I think it's very interesting. And I'll say this to explain that. When you look at Confederate war memorials in the South and you tell the history of them, okay, the reason they were allowed to exist at all was to bind the wounds of the nation. Okay, a nation, the bloodiest conflict in American history is the American Civil War. And in the aftermath of that Civil War, right, so many dead, the Union was in no mood. To see Confederate war memorials go up. So, the South was occupied, right? And it was subdued. It was conquered. And Reconstruction began. And so when you tell the story, and you look at why those things were allowed, what you find was they were allowed, and the same reasons that we have bases named for Confederate generals. Why was that allowed? Right? It was to bind the Union. It was to allow them some due for their history. Okay? It was, in fact, a compromise. Because not everybody was good with it. And so, I mean, I think when you don't acknowledge that, and then you read quotes like this. These statues were meant to create legitimate garb for white supremacy. You know, you read stuff like that, and you're just like, do you read history at all? Or do you just have a political agenda, and you just hijack history? Oh, I just have a political agenda, and I hijack history. So, anyway, so we'll talk a little bit about that today. And, as I'm prone to do, we'll read the Gettysburg Address, one of the great speeches in American history. One, for its brevity, but two, when you read it, you're struck by Lincoln's simplicity and also the deep, deep meaning, especially if you've ever fought for the country. So we'll do that. Alex Holling's going to join us today on this. Alex just moved, right? He's been doing some serious stuff. Like 2 weeks ago, his mother was contemplating moving down to where he lives. So he was helping his mother. And so, yeah, he was doing that. And now, Alex, don't you know, he is, what's he doing now? He's just riding, but oh, he's moved over the weekend. Yeah, so he moved over the weekend, and so that's what he's doing now. And he's been doing it all weekend, and he called me and he said, hey, man, I'm not going to be able to do Skype tomorrow. Is that okay? Are you going to hate me? I said, no, come on. I want to hear about the adventures moving. So that happened, and my number two son is now detached from the Marine Corps and is driving east to go start another phase of his life. So Patrick Francis, I had to inspect everything where he lived here, his room, the bathroom, and he failed both. Yeah, he got yoked up. Then we had to do a walk around the garage where his shit was. Guess what? He had left too much of it. I said, get this stuff out of here, man. How long have I been telling you to get it out? He's like, whoa. I'm like, yeah, whoa. Take your shit and go and get. So, Patrick driving, I think he's headed to New Orleans and going to meet his girl there. And then they'll drive, she lives in the D.C. area, so then they're going to drive across the country, going to swing through Nashville. And so a little bit of a big weekend here, as son number two heads off into another chapter of his life, which is always interesting. You know, my daughter's calling and said to me, aren't you sad that Patrick's leaving? I said, no, come on. You raised them to go live their lives and to do good things. And so good for him. So that went on over the weekend. Here's an email. Mac, it's interesting listening to you talk about Confederate monuments and such. It's also disturbing that we don't go back and footnote these things and explain them, because I think it would go to great lengths. And it would be a great lesson for all of us to tell the truth about these things. Lincoln, that poor guy, his crazy wife, the death of his children, all must have weighed heavily on him. And then the American Civil War, inept generals at the start, and all of that, along with the whole issue of slavery. How should it be handled by this young nation? Not even 100 years old yet. And in the midst of that steps a lawyer from the great state of Illinois, born in Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken. His greatness is in how he tended to balance issues and how he tended to get them right. And dare I say, his handling of the South and his discussion of that was important to the reconstruction of the nation. I believe we skip over that narrative these days, just as we rush to embrace him as, quote-unquote, the great emancipator. I appreciate your very down-to-earth and candid look at history. And wouldn't it be interesting if those monuments to the Confederacy told that story? I've heard you talk about this before. Instead of, quote, bleaching our history, why wouldn't we tell it? This monument represents the following. Within a mile from where you're standing, 200,000 black human beings were sold. They were sold at this building and this building and this building in our city, period. This statue was erected in 190XYZ. It is a symbol of the Confederate States of America. It was allowed by a nation that was seeking to bind its wounds and to move forward together again. A much different story than taking the monument down. I lament our ignorance. Ooh, I like that. I like that. Well said. I lament our ignorance. Well, you know, and what's really disturbing is the shrill nature of our ignorance, too, right? Our ignorance screams the loudest, right? In fact, you know, our ignorance pretty much, if you want to take a thumbnail shot of ignorance, the story that comes out of, the story that comes out of what, Chicago, this actor who I don't watch the program. But the story now is that, I mean, for instance, it's this complete crazy narrative that this actor paid these two guys who worked on the show to attack him, right, and to put a noose around his neck. And then it's just the whole thing's fabricated. That is how we do it now. It's just fabricated. It's the same thing that happened with those kids that went to Washington, D.C. and got embroiled with the Native American protesters. The truth of what happened is those Native American protesters went rolling in there looking for video so that they could send it viral for their own specific reason. Right? And you see that red hat, and it is like a magnet for trouble, right? That hat represents, no matter what the president wants to think, in the country, right? When things happen, that hat represents the worst things in our country. There's a MAGA hat. MAGA hat. Let's go get them. So, anyway, just this story out of Chicago is totally fabricated. And it's fed to a media that runs to that narrative and doesn't skew to the truth, which, again, is disturbing. So Lincoln's greatness is in his truth, not in the lies that people tell. The turmoil that he went through, Martin Luther King's greatness is in the turmoil that Dr. King went through. And if you read about that guy's life and you see what he had to go through, you're like, holy shit, man. It's amazing that guy ever went to sleep in his life with all the turmoil in his life. So anyway, so good morning to you on this President's Day, as I said. And then we're going to have a special interview, guest interview this week that Gunnar and I will record later on today. But I'll let Gunnar introduce it. But somebody who Mike met. Years ago, and so he will. You'll hear him this week, so that'll be interesting. And so, the United States Marine Corps Band makes it official this morning. Good morning to you. We'll be right back. dedicated to our presidents, Lincoln and Washington, and how we historically honored them for the great contributions they made. I don't think there's any greater president. I think it's pretty easy. Any poll that you look at in terms of greatest presidents in American history, I don't think anybody quarrels with number one. The question is, whose source do you want to believe? Now, Business Insider, that's a lot of writing these days, right? Wrote an article last year on the 4th of July, all right? Top 20 presidents in U.S. history, according to historians. Okay, so 100 historians polled. And I think sometimes, I don't think you should be able to begin the poll unless you've been out of office for like 50 years, because I don't think people are capable of. Number one, Abraham Lincoln. Number two, George Washington. Number three, Franklin Roosevelt. Number four, Theodore Roosevelt. I was thinking about Theodore Roosevelt this weekend, and I'll tell you why. Number five, Dwight Eisenhower. Kind of interesting that he ranks up there. Number six, Harry Truman. Notice all recent. Number seven, Thomas Jefferson. Number eight, John Kennedy. I see. Number nine, Ronald Reagan. Number 10, Lyndon Johnson. You know what? Oh, my God. Here's how you know it's bullshit, right? Barack Obama's number 12. Bill Clinton's number 15. Come on. Good Lord, man. Back away from recent history, for God's sakes. Ugh. See, that's what you get. You try to give a publication a little help. But I don't think when you look at any of these, when you read any of these polls, this is a website called The Ranker. Number one, George Washington. Number two, Abraham Lincoln. Number three, Thomas Jefferson. Number four, James Madison. Number five, John Kennedy. I mean, Kennedy for what? What did Kennedy do as a president other than roll around with Jacqueline Onassis? Mac, how dare you, sir? I can hear Foghorn Leghorn talking to me. How dare you, sir? The best presidents as ranked by presidential historians. Jackie Bischoff, February 19th, 2017. So 2 years ago. Number one, Lincoln. Number two, Washington. Number three, Roosevelt. Number four, Roosevelt. Number five, Eisenhower. Number six, Truman. Number seven, Jefferson. Eight, Kennedy. I don't get Kennedy. See, I don't get this. I'm done with that poll, okay? I don't get, like, what did John Kennedy do? I got it. He's a rock star. And look, this is Washington Post. New ranking of U.S. presidents. This is done in 2015. Barack Obama is still in office. Puts Lincoln as one and Obama as 18. Oh, my God. I mean, honestly, it's a joke. Barack Obama was a weak president, right? And the nation loved him as a rock star, but that doesn't make you a great president, for God's sakes. You know, whenever you see, you know, over 200 years of American history and everybody in there is from the last 30 or 40 years, that's wrong. This article in USA Today has Franklin Roosevelt as America's greatest president. Theodore Roosevelt right behind him. For some reason, they appear in tandem in most of these polls. Abraham Lincoln is three. Washington is 4. She doesn't sing till Friday. All right, so on that cue, okay, on that cue, this is dedicated to our president. In particular, Washington and Lincoln and their great contributions to this unique country on the planet, this unique experiment in democracy that continues to evolve today, very painfully evolve today, or regress, depending on how you look at our evolution. So, good morning to you. This is dedicated, to them.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major, and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
You know, here's what I thought about Theodore Roosevelt over the weekend. Theodore Roosevelt, right, in terms of the Panama Canal and stuff like that, was he taking no for an answer? I'll give you the answer to that. No, he wasn't taking no for an answer. That thing was getting built. And if he had a scintilla, right, of a intellectual position to stand on, he was going to use whatever power he could to make that case. Now, Donald Trump is no Theodore Roosevelt. But I think if you watch the shit show that is our southern border, and you see all of it, what it contributes to the country, and how unfair it is in particular to the people that live in the southwestern part of the United States, that the federal government has not lived up to its obligations to secure the southern border, and now you watch that it's a political issue. It's not about what you're doing right. It's simply a political issue. If I were the president of the United States, I'd do something, man. Yeah, you can bitch at me all you want. You can bitch at me all you want, but if I can do something along the lines of Theodore Roosevelt, and what do they call him? They call him a madman. Roosevelt's a madman. Trust busting and all the rest of it that he did. Roosevelt, you know, the ruination of the country. Well, he's looked at as one of the most far-sighted presidents ever. I mean, the reforms that he laid relative to child labor, the workday, relative to the national park system, all the different things Theodore Roosevelt, you can lay at his feet. I mean, amazing. But let me tell you, he did not suffer fools, and he did not stand inactive. So, you know, we're reading this discussion about the president's executive powers and whatnot. Look, none of this would be necessary if Congress would do the right thing, right? And again, the right thing in terms of securing the border, the right thing by the Dreamers, and the right thing relative to the parents of the Dreamers that have come here illegally that aren't leaving in spite of what Ann Coulter says. So, anyway, so do the right thing. And if you don't do the right thing, what are we supposed to do? Wallow sideways forever because you can't get your shit together? No, I say act like Theodore Roosevelt. WW, what would TR do? Exactly. WWTRD. What would Theodore Roosevelt do? He would act. He would find some scintilla of power. He would carve it out and he would act. And then, you know, let the chips fall where they may if the American people don't like it. But let me just tell you this. And I think this is you can say, Mac, you have a vice lock on the obvious. And this is going to be a part of that. Okay. If he builds a wall, right? If he gives the Dreamer some pathway to citizenship and begins to deal with their parents, and he negotiates a trade deal with China that is on a par, protects intellectual property rights. It has to do that, period, right? And then it balances in terms of tariffs what the Chinese are doing. Trump will get reelected, and they know it. And they know it. Because the middle of the country is not down with the socialist wing of the Democratic Party. It's not. So to me, were I Trump, I would do things and I would ask for permission later. You can always apologize. Do the right thing. Do the right thing to the states along the border. Do the right thing. Stop the human trafficking and that garbage bullshit that's going on. Right? Do the right thing for the cities on the Mexican side of the border. Those things have been turned into absolute cesspools by what the United States has allowed at its border. So anyway, we'll check the weather here. Currently cloudy and 43 in Quantico. They have two weather advisories. Now, if I were to look at those weather advisories, normally two doesn't meet the threshold, but there's a winter storm watch in effect, and there's a small craft advisory. There's always a small craft advisory in Northern Virginia because of the Chesapeake, and any wind creates one. All right, at Camp Lejeune, it is cloudy and 55, although nobody's working today, so it's all right. Granbury, Texas, the home of Mike Musselman, it is cloudy and 37. 29 Palms, sunny and 36. Camp Pendleton, sunny and 37. Okinawa, Japan is the hot spot on the planet. Dark, cloudy, and 72. In the Al Anbar province of Iraq, it is dark, cloudy, and 57. So it's warmed up there a little bit. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it's warmed up there a little bit. It is clear, dark, and 52 at the home of All Marine Radio. At the southern end of Los Angeles County, in about the southwest part of Orange County, just above San Diego County, it is sunny and 41 degrees, looking for a high of, this can't be right, oh, I had the forecast for Quantico. Yeah, when I clicked on the small craft advisories, it flipped to that. I was like, 42 degrees here today? What? Looking for a high of sunny and 58 degrees here. Tomorrow, sunny and 59. And on Wednesday, partly sunny and 59 degrees. Yeah, this like hasn't cracked 60. Right? Hasn't cracked 60. Like, when is this stuff going to end? Oh, we're going to get in the 60s in March. Wow. All right, global warming. This sucks. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it. We'll check some news headlines, but there won't be that much. You want to know why? Because it's a holiday weekend. And when it's a holiday weekend, where do the reporters go? They leave town. So if the reporters are gone, the B team is involved, and you're not going to get news. So don't touch that dial. More of this great program coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
a message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara. And you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk you through a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go. I wanna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears when I reach there. I'll scream, yeah, I'll let it all out. But right now,
so we'll check a few headlines. See what's being written in our nation's publications relative to the Marine Corps. Lead story in Marine Corps Times is still a story about a Marine Raider awarded Silver Star. I got an email the other day that says, Mac, don't even bother with the narrative. It's too redacted. Trust me, the dude every bit earned that thing. But can't write a whole lot about what he did for whatever reason, so I will leave it at that. Secretary of Defense, military housing dollars unlikely to be diverted for the border wall. Now, that doesn't look good in light of the hearings that just got held last week in Washington, D.C., where military spouses got up there and vented on the private companies that, run military housing. And much of that was no bueno. So now on the heels of that, you're like, we're going to take money from military construction? Is it coming out of military housing? Dependent housing? What? So anyway, so we have that going for us. story about retaliation of spouses that was there last week. And then CNO defends scathing internal report on the Fitzgerald, on keeping the Fitzgerald collision from the public. So what would the point of that be? Now, what we heard in the past, this is Jeff Zulowitz, who's been riding on these incidents, both the McCain and the Fitzgerald. Zulowitz came by a report that wasn't released by the Navy, one that was done in the direct aftermath of it, wrote a series of articles about it, citing how terrible it was. Now, the problem with not releasing that report is a false narrative gets into the public. It doesn't paint an accurate picture of the incompetence that went on the ship. And you have people that probably ought to just shut their mouths because of the way they performed, running around the public, right, and attempting to be victims in all this. Well, anyway. This is out of San Diego. The Navy's top officer on Friday defended his decision to keep from the public eye damning internal report on the 2017 warship Fitzgerald collision that killed seven sailors. Speaking to reporters after his appearance at the U.S. Naval Institute's West 2019 conference here, CNO Admiral John Richardson said much of the report overlapped with what the service released publicly. No, it didn't. Okay. And the reaction to this report stands in stark contrast to the watered-down version of it that was released by the United States Navy. Much of the probe overseen by Rear Admiral Brian Fort, who wrote the report, right, portrayed a far grimmer picture of what the crew of the Guadalcanal missile destroyer faced. It also prompted hard questions about the actions taken by the Fitz's squadron and Navy officials back in the United States. First revealed by Navy Times, the Fort report chronicled details that Richardson, other Navy leaders, and their public reports never mentioned, such as specifics about the destroyer's brutal operational tempo, officers who didn't trust each other, radars that didn't work, and sailors who didn't know how to operate them. The investigators also portrayed the ship's chief's mess as ineffective and their sailors plagued by low morale in the months leading up to the June 17, 2017 collision. Richardson's quoted here. Richardson stood by his decision to keep details from the public, insisting that the Fort report's status as a dual-purpose investigation meant it was, quote, locked up in other litigation. I think what you'll find is that if you take a look at what we did release, that there was a tremendous overlap, and there's a lot of difference in terms of actionable information between what we released and what you released, Richardson told Navy Times. Richardson said the Navy released the entirety of its comprehensive review and strategic readiness review, calling it, quote, the appropriate amount of information, adding that it provided a sufficient level of actionable details. So, pretty interesting little exchange between he and Senator King. Navy, again, the Navy in not in a good place institutionally. They are grappling with a lot of the issues that our culture grapples with, the Marine Corps grapples with. And that is, but the problem is the Navy's lost its discipline and it's lost its edge. And how do you run essentially a civilian organization with uniforms on if you don't have that? And you look at the direction that the 7th Fleet is going in, and that's the direction of the country, right? You raise kids who don't understand what consequences are. You can't impose discipline on them because they won't have it. So how do you do this? How does it work? The answer is it doesn't. So that's going on today. Also, top five stories in Early Bird real quick, and then we'll get Alex Hollings on here. Alex's been moving all weekend, so it will be interesting to talk to him. It's always interesting to talk to people that are moving. You know, in fact, my son said it while he was packing his stuff. He goes, you know, you go to pack your stuff, and it's like, this stuff just doesn't stop happening. You know, you think, and then you say, oh yeah, in that closet. And then you open the closet. And even though you think you've cleaned it all out, there's still too much stuff in there. Like, where did it all come from? I said, yeah, it is that way, man. It is that way. It's just the way it is. Okay? It's just the way it is. So, anyway, top five stories in early bird. Number one. Now this has been updated because they've taken the day off. So, there you have it. Let's go to top stories in. My next favorite is Stars and Stripes. Now, back in the day, I would have said Stars and Stripes, the military propaganda wing of the DOD. I would not tell you that anymore. Stars and Stripes does some pretty quality reporting. Florida military bases could lose up to $177 million to the border wall. That's that military construction bases that were, I believe, supposed to get funding based on the hurricanes that hit last year. Mm-hmm. Surrounded Islamic State militants asked for an exit, refused to surrender. Yeah. I don't think anybody's going to be... looking at that favorably. All right. Al Omar oil field base, whatever this is. More than 300 Islamic State militants surrounded in a tiny area in eastern Syria are refusing to surrender to U.S.-backed Syrian forces and are trying to negotiate an exit, Syrian activist and a person close to the negotiations said Monday. Why would they think that they could do that? Because they've done it in the past. Hey, look, we'll say that we don't want to fight, right? These rubes will negotiate with us, we'll agree to anything, and then we'll get out of here, and then we'll just go back to fighting them. The development comes amid the Islamic State group's last stand in the village of Baghouz, where militants are hiding among hundreds of civilians and preventing them from leaving. It also will likely further delay a declaration on ISIS's territorial defeat by the U.S.-backed Syrian forces, who were hoping to make that last week. A person familiar with the negotiations said the militants are asking for a corridor to the rebel-held northwestern province of Idlib and demand that they be allowed to leave along with the evacuated civilians. It's not clear how the current standoff will be resolved. This is crazy stuff. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights on an activist group that monitors the civil war in Syria said another request by the Islamic State is to be evacuated to neighboring Iraq. That was also rejected. The group said that ISIS released Sunday 10 SDF fighters it had been holding, adding that it was not clear what, if anything, the extremists would get in return. So that's going on. You don't hear a lot about that. New army rifles, more versatility in combat. We'll talk to Mike about this. Last month, a soldier had carried the M4 in combat, was given the new army squad-designated marksman rifle, or SDMR. After just a couple of days handling the new weapon, he said it felt like something that he could fill the needs of both his previous weapons. He said that more mobility and close combat capabilities like the M4, but also better precision at distances like the M110. So, there you have it. So, that's in the news. We'll talk to Mike about that. And last one, Army veteran plans to be buried in a tomb inside former military transport ship. Fort Walton Beach, Florida. Jim Tucker reckons the concrete-hulled boat in Santa Rosa Sound, where he spends his days, has about 1,000 years before it crumbles to dust, settling into a mushy pile at the bottom where it might be moored. However long the boat lasts, when it goes down, Tucker will go down with it. He plans to be laid to his eternal rest in the bow of the now nearly century-old vessel, probably in a body bag encased in fiberglass inside a sealed concrete vault. Go figure. Go figure. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Alex Hollings, the one and only Alex Hollings, will join us here on a Monday edition, a President's Day edition of Allmarine Radio, right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. So don't touch that dial.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project.